And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 716. Continuing our team-by-team previews for the 2025 fantasy baseball season. We're heading to Chicago, to the Chicago White Sox. Always a fun one to talk about just because you never know what you're going to get on this one. There's a handful of players that on paper maybe should be good and just haven't panned out lately. So I have the White Sox guru to help me with this. You know, I threw him a bone. We talked bullpens a few weeks back, so it wasn't just, you know, you're only coming on to get tortured here type thing. So we got to have some fun with it as well. But he's a busy man. You can find him over at Fantrax.com, over at RotoBaller. He's one of the co-hosts on the Fantasy Baseball Beat, one of the best up-and-coming podcasts out there. And he's on Twitter at MDRC0508. Our good buddy, Mike Carter. How you doing, my friend?
Bubba, I am good. Considering that it's about 8 degrees and blowing snow here in the Midwest, and you're laughing at me, you know, it's not too bad. I mean, we're less than a month away from pitchers and catchers reporting. We don't really know who those are going to be for the White Sox. They got about a dozen catchers of very little value coming to camp, it looks like. But yeah, no, life is good, man. We're good. 716 episodes, Bubba. That's wild, man.
Yeah, no, it's fun. Appreciate it. You've been a part of a handful of them, so it's been good to have you along for the ride. Getting to meet you and Arizona has helped a ton, obviously. That's why, you know, Ryan and I keep telling everybody first pitch. They probably get annoyed after a while, but it's like it changes things. It makes like conversations just it's a different ballgame. So
absolutely.
So I appreciate you. Before we get started, I kind of mentioned where they can find you, but I know you're busy, so let everybody know what you got going on.
Yeah, you hit it right on the head. I mean, we're working for a couple of websites. I'm working at Fantrax. We'll be doing bullpens there again this year. RotoBaller, I'll be doing a couple of pieces a week. I don't exactly know what those are going to look like yet, but I've been working on some player previews for them. And then also co-hosting the Fantasy Baseball Beat with Torres and Dave Funnel. It's been really fun. We've got Jalen Thompson coming on to talk Royals later this week. Nice. We got Gary Phillips coming on to talk Yankees here in a couple of weeks. So we're filling up the schedule with that. You know how that goes. Producing a podcast is a lot more work than what people think it is, isn't it?
The booking part is so much fun because I think I told you on the last show, and it's something I want to delve back into a little bit, but I don't want to step on toes like your guys is. But like a few years back, I did it was called Around the Bases of Bubba and Mo, and we had beat writers on, and it was a ton of fun. Like it's like that's why I love what you guys do because it's a different, like we have our fantasy brains on, they have their team brains, and putting them together, ours and theirs, you can decipher some interesting things, or at least ask questions that might not get asked type stuff. So it's a very, very fun concept. Plus, you know, you, me, and many others that play fantasy baseball, we're just baseball nerds anyways. Mm-hmm. So, like, they don't even want to talk fantasy. Let's just talk shop. Like, I'm in all day long. So that's why I love those shows. Like, that's where I met Craig Mish for the first time. Like, still have never met the guy physically, but having him on the show, like, you're talking about all these guys, Gary Phillips and all these different dudes. It's just like, you know, you follow them on whatever social media you follow them on. But they're just normal dudes that want to hang out and talk baseball. So it's a lot of fun. So I like that you guys do that. One day I'll get back into that. That's kind of like the reason I started doing this is just to talk baseball. I wasn't even in full bore wanting to go into fantasy. I'd love it. Like, that's why I do it now. But the initial point was just I want to talk baseball with people. So it is a lot of fun. So that's pretty, pretty sweet stuff indeed. All right, let's get cooking. Chicago White Sox, before we get into the 2025 preview, I have a hunch. I know part of the answer here, but what were your thoughts on the 2024 season? I ask everybody, so I'm not just doing it to you.
No, I understand. I mean, I was preparing for that one. I think it obviously it was a nightmare. I mean, I don't think anybody thought it would be as bad as what it ended up being. I mean, they were historically bad, lost 121 games. There were so many times watching the games last season where if they had done one or two things right, that they would have been able to turn the corner. And part of that was having the worst bullpen I think I've ever seen. I mean, and I've seen a lot of bad ones, obviously, but it was about the worst. You know, if they blew 37 saves last year, and if they had converted half of those, you know, they would have been bad, but not historically bad, right? So there is some hope for the future, which we'll talk about tonight. They do have some prospects that are up and coming. They do have currently six of the top 60 in the top 100 rated in MLB. We'll talk about those guys a little bit. It's going to be another down year. I mean, I don't think anyone's expecting them to come out and, you know, be 500 or anything like that. But they've made some better additions, I think, in real fantasy and real baseball, not in fantasy, that are going to be super helpful to us. But I do think that it's going to be a better team this year. They look like they'll be a little bit more cohesive. They've got a new manager coming up with Will Venable. And I think he's going to do a better job than what Pedro Grifol did, because I think Jack Carter could do a better job managing the White Sox than Pedro Grifol did. So it was a nightmare. I'm glad that it's over, and looking forward to putting it behind us and hopefully getting 60 wins this year as opposed to 41.
Well, Uncle Ted's in the chat and says they're winning over 80. So I want whenever Uncle Ted's enjoying this evening on a Tuesday night. But I'm with you, over 60 baby steps. Like you said, they're building the farm system. We'll get into that. But that's what teams like this have to do that aren't going to spend money, unfortunately. At least not that it appears they're going to spend money. So you got to build it the way they're building it, and it takes time and patience, to say the least. All right, let's get into these teams. For anybody wanting to keep track at home, we're using ADP since 12/21/15 Draft Champions Drafts. And we're just going to kind of go through some of the key fantasy players. And if there's any I miss, Mike's going to let us know. So we'll start at the top with Lubob, Luis Robert Jr. And it's just like the yearly conundrum of can he stay healthy and what are we going to get? And, you know, his ADP is 94, 95. So it's definitely lower than it's pretty much ever been, which is it's kind of enticing. But it was just another year, Mike, where, you know, he got 100 games, at least back-to-back seasons with that. But he hasn't fully put it together. But now at that ADP, you know, 15-plus homers, 20-plus steals, does that work for you?
Yeah, I think that there's a lot to be said here about Lubob. You know, I think that he will start the season with the team. I don't think they're going to trade him now. I think they're going to try to see if they can rebuild some value by being healthy and then hopefully being productive. This is a guy that has only played over 140 games one time in his career. You know, he's had seasons of 68, 98, 100, 145. If healthy, he is one of the premier center fielders in the game. But I would also add that it's not only just about health with him, it's also about being engaged. And there's been a lot of talk in Chicago and in the national media, too, about him being somewhat disengaged when the team isn't very good. He had a really down year last year. Strikeout rate was up over 5 points from what it had been before. His ISO was down as low as it's been in his career. I do think he's a bounce back candidate. I do think that if he's healthy, again, that's a huge if, but if he were somehow able to get into 140 games, I think that the situation is ripe for a 25 home run, a 20 to 25 steal season, just considering the fact that he's going to play every day because they simply don't have anybody else. As long as he's healthy, he's going to play. The problem is that the White Sox are very well known for having soft tissue injuries over the years. And when these guys blow out a hamstring or pull something, they miss weeks at a time. It's not just a couple of day weekend warrior type thing like you or I might get. They're out for the duration. So I think at that price, I am willing to buy back in on that. I mean, if it was another round higher, I would probably pass.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. He's been falling enough since the degenerate drafts we started a long time ago that he's at least kind of palpable, because like he's going right behind Brian Reynolds, who's a safer play on paper. So I get it if you want the floor play with Brian Reynolds, but ceiling, you'd say Lubob's got it, especially if he played 140 games. He's going like six picks after Saya. I'm still a Saya guy, but he's at least falling back into a pocket that makes sense compared to recent years, and especially when the run production won't be there. But power and speed, and we've seen him hit for okay average. So it is interesting, to say the least. A guy that I've liked a lot late as a first baseman or as a corner infield or like a backup first baseman in a draft champions type format is Andrew Vaughn. Very boring profile. Like I get it. Very boring. 246. I always thought he'd be a better batting average guy from watching him in college, but he never did. But 17 or more homers in three straight years. Just is kind of consistent. This is who he is. ADP's 275, Mike. How are you feeling about him this season as he should be hitting every day in the middle of that order?
Yeah, he's probably going to bat cleanup, I would imagine, at this point. They don't have much in the way of competition for him. He's going to play every day. This is a guy that's also played dinged up and doesn't really get a lot of press for doing that. He's played with hand injuries and foot injuries that a lot of lesser players probably would have sat with. I think he's a really good bet as a corner infielder. 20 home runs, 80 RBI seems in reach. I think that the batting average the last couple of years isn't necessarily a great indicator of how good of a hitter he is. He's a gap to gap guy. You know, probably the biggest problem with him is that coming up, the comps were, you know, he's Jeff Bagwell. Well, he's not Jeff Bagwell. So that doesn't mean he's not serviceable for our game, though. You know, this is a guy that is a corner infielder. You know he's going to play. He's been healthy. I mean, even though he's played through injury, he's 134, 152, 149 games the last 3 years. So you know he's durable. You know he's going to play. And he just signed a fairly, you know, decent contract in terms of avoiding arbitration. This is a guy that could easily get traded too. And if he gets traded to another team, it would be really interesting to see what he's able to do in a better lineup, because God knows it would be a better lineup than this one.
Yeah, most will be upgrades from the White Sox, that is for sure. But yeah, I like this, the boringness of Vaughn, because at that ADP, you can kind of pencil it in almost, which is a beautiful thing to do. All right, Benny Biceps, he flexed him last year, hitting 20 home runs, the most he's hit since 2017, but only stole three bases and hit 229, which is a massive drop. Strikeout rate rose as well, which you'll probably get into. But it's like in years previously, you get a few homers and okay steals and a really good batting average. But now you hit for some power, which is enticing. And his ADP is 363, so the market's not buying it. What should we be thinking about Mr. Andrew Benintendi?
You know, the thing that's funny about him is if you ever really want to like mess with your brain, look at his career lines. Because every season it seems like he's done something different and he can't make up his mind who he is. It's like it's like he's schizophrenic or something, you know? Like there was the 1 year where he started where he was 20-20 and you're like, wow, this is the new big thing, you know? And then he went to Kansas City and then decided to just hit for batting average and he hit over 300. And there was no power. Last year, he started swinging for the fences again and hitting for power. You know, he had the highest ISO that he's had in about 5 or 6 years, I think, as he was going through there. He struck out more, but still doesn't strike out a ton. He's got like an 18% strikeout rate. That's not outside the realm of possibility. I think he's a little bit miscast in this lineup. And, you know, I think when they signed him, they thought he was the missing piece to a playoff contender. He's not. He's playing left field for them on a daily basis. He, too, plays 120, 130 games. I think in our game, for fantasy purposes, this is a good, you know, fourth or fifth outfielder. Again, boring. He'll hit you 20 home runs. He's not going to really help you out with too many other things. He might score some runs if he's hitting in front of Luis Robert. But, you know, it's not a real sexy profile. But I think the 20 home runs is fairly repeatable. I mean, some people will probably say, oh, 12, 14 might seem more in line. But I think he's selling out to do that more and sell out for power more. And then on this team, why not? You know, like they're not going to – he's not like he's trying to build value for the next contract. They still got him for 3 years. There was a lot of rumor that they were trying to move him too, that, you know, you got to take this contract if we're going to give you somebody that's good. And that didn't work out so well. But I think for fantasy purposes, is he a guy that you want to build around? No. Is he a guy that you might be able to have on your bench that could hit you a couple home runs in a week where you have somebody hurt? Yeah, absolutely. Fourth or fifth outfielder, I think, for our purposes.
Yeah, I really weirdly like him in Draft Champions, where you just kind of pick your poison. He's going to play most of the time because he's not like has been rather healthy throughout his career. So even if he goes back to being an average guy or stakes with power at that point in the DC when you're drafting, you know, 10 outfielders or whatever, that could be kind of productive as the season goes on. It's very enticing. 12 teams are tough, 15s and deeper. I'm in. Now, something that makes Lou Bob and Andrew Vaughn's run production more intriguing this season, and I say this seriously, even though most people will laugh, is Mike Tauchman. Like, this is the kind of move that I like to say cheap franchises or rebuilding franchises need to make, honestly. Yep. Like, he's a professional baseball player. Like, I mean that not just because he's a pro, but he actually goes out there, plays like a big leaguer, and he gets on base like crazy. And so this could be the dude that helps things out. ADP is 463, so I say this saying it might be better for Lou Bob and Vaughn, but what are your thoughts on drafting an Andrew or a Mike Tauchman at, say, ADP 460?
You know, the funny thing is that in looking at his stuff from last year, he would have had the highest WRC plus on the White Sox at 111. So let's just put it there. Man. So they signed him to do one thing, and that's to play against righties and play right field. And I think Austin Slater and he are going to be in some level of platoon, although I think Tauchman will play more than Slater. They seem to really like Slater playing against lefties, and they're saying that they're not going to play Tauchman against lefties, and they're going to platoon. I think Tauchman could really kind of go past that. I mean, this is a guy that I think could definitely, you know, get double digits in home runs and double digits in steal with a high OBP. He's a good hitter. He's a good professional player. This is the type of guy, you're exactly right, that a terrible team needs. But he's going to get on base and he's going to score some runs, because I think that they're going to be better in that regard than what they've been. Because last year, the leadoff spot was just an absolute black hole for them. They just could never figure out who that guy was going to be and what they wanted to do with that. And therefore they didn't have, if you don't know who your leadoff man is, you don't have one. Right. Yeah, so that's kind of the rule. But I think Tauchman is a good player and somebody that could really benefit from. They should just leave him alone and let him play every day. Yep. And that could be what ends up happening. But they've got a lot of crappy outfielders, as you know.
Yeah, when I hear the word Austin Slater, I cringe as a Giants fan here.
Giants guy. Yep.
I'll give him credit. Like, he can hit a lefty. Like, I'm not going to say he can't, but can't do much else. So he deserves to be platooned. I think that's fair. But, yeah, I think the Tauchman's interesting, especially that at 460 ADP. All right, a player that I've been going to bat for, and a player that even James Anderson, surprisingly, when I was on the show with him last week of RotoWire, is on board with, that is Lenin Sosa. Now, there are moving pieces where there could be creativity to mess with his playing time, but on paper, mm-hmm. Lenin Sosa, second base, third base eligible. He has an ADP of 447, and we've seen this guy show some nice thump in the minors, and a little bit in the majors, and even hitting 8 homers, hitting 254 in 100 games last year, gives me something to be excited about. Where do you sit on Lenin Sosa for a guy I actually watched probably most of those 100 games?
Yeah, unfortunately, I watched a ton of those. Mm-hmm. He's an interesting player. I mean, he's a guy that, you know, he seems like he's been kind of on the periphery or on the verge for a number of years, yet is still only 24. There were a lot of questions. You know, the White Sox management team, if you want to call it that, over the years has questioned his work ethic quite a bit and has questioned his ability to be able to focus while playing games and being involved. What we saw in the second half, though, was that if they just plugged him in and kind of left him alone, and he seemed like he was pretty okay. There's a question here about second base, third base. Maybe he's playing a little bit of both. I wonder what they're doing here. I mean, they've got a bunch of, we'll talk about that, I'm sure. They got a bunch of you know, nobody middle infielder type guys that are not very good. I think Sosa's going to get a chance to play every day, and I think he should. Whether that happens at third base or second base, I'm not sure. They have another young guy that they acquired in the Garrett Crochet trade named Chase Meadroth, who looks like he is going to be in camp and competing for a job on this team with Brooks Baldwin. Also with Josh Rojas, who they signed for reasons I don't fully understand. They got a bunch of guys that it looks like they're just going to kind of nickel and dime with and play around with and see who can play and who can't. But Sosa does have some pop, guys. I mean, I think if you're looking at a cheap middle infield option that could hit you 15 home runs and have a decent batting average, I think he can hit. I think the biggest question is, you know, can he play a position in the field well enough? I mean, you might remember, and I'm sure you saw the clip. I'm not sure if anybody who's listening did, but on a throwdown to second base where he was covering second base from the catcher, he got hit right between the eyes because he wasn't paying attention to the throw. And that's a really emblematic part of the White Sox season, you know, like, yeah, guy ends up having to leave the game with a broken schnoz because he's not paying attention to what he should be paying attention to. You know,
he actually goes and covers the base. So he knows the throw's coming and still, yes, that's impressive.
Pops him right in the face. Yeah. And then it's incredulous, you know, like, what? I don't understand what happened. Well, I get what happened.
Yeah,
but I do think Sosa can hit a little bit. I mean, he doesn't have a real high K rate. I think he's going to put the bat on the ball and he could be a surprise. If you're looking for middle infield help late in drafts, I think you could do a lot worse.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So you backed up what me and James are thinking. So that is a fun one there. Last one I have down, we'll mention it and then we'll go to a couple of you added on here, is Miguel Vargas. Mm-hmm. Everyone, you know, wanted him to be this dude in LA. He didn't really get consistent playing time, so I always gave him a grain of salt. Like, young kids need to play. I've preached that a million times on this show. Goes to Chicago. I'm like, okay, obviously team environment changes, but regular playing time, awesome. And he got that. It didn't fully pan out. I think we got the best meme ever when he's in Oakland sitting there in the dugout, and no one will forget that picture. but still, dude's super young, and his ADP is 441. He's third base outfield eligible. Should we still be believing in Miguel Vargas?
Yes. He's going to get an opportunity to play here. I think he's going to DH more than he's going to play third base, would be my guess. He did not look great at third base in the short stint that he had there. But this is a guy that has been messed with everywhere he's gone, right? He's never really gotten an opportunity. I think he had a touch over 300 at-bats with the Dodgers a couple years back. There's some power there. There's some pop there. There's definitely something that, if the Dodgers like you, there's something to you, right? I mean, I think that he's got to get an opportunity. Now, I think that there's a lot of look, you know, you look at the averages over the course of his first three seasons, 170, 195, 150. I mean, it's obviously horrible, but give the guy a chance and let him and see what he can do. This was a guy that was a top prospect in one of the best systems in baseball. You don't just suddenly go to shit completely overnight, right? I mean, like, there's got to be something there, and he's got a perfect opportunity to play with the White Sox and see. I think that they're going to give him a 100-game stint and just, you know, at the start of the season say, look, you're just going to play, and let's see what he's got. I mean, it might be nothing. We'll have to see. But I do think that there's 15 home run pop in that bat there if he's allowed to play.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I'm at. And again, it's like we say it year after year, bad teams still have fantasy relevant players, and they come at a discount. That's the, like most of these players we talked about, even Andrew Vaughn was 275. But, you know, Benintendi was like 360. Talkman was 460. Sosa's 440. Vargas is around 440. Like, they're all coming cheap. And so they're not costing you a lot. They're going to play. Playing time is king in a lot of these formats. So that's why I love doing this show, because you can't just write these guys off at all times. And again, a lot of these guys are so young. So like you wouldn't, like they might not all pan out, but you can't be shocked if one or two does. And that's the beauty of a giving them the run and see where things go type thing. Who are a couple other guys you got here? Because Ramos is a guy I've always been a fan of, but he couldn't get regular playing time last year, but maybe he does this year. So you have Chase Medroth and Brian Ramos also.
Yeah, Medroth is a really interesting player to me because, you know, when the White Sox made that trade with the Red Sox, everybody was really big on the Teal get from that and also the Montgomery get from that. So we added another Montgomery to the team. Hopefully one of them can pan out. I hope both of them do. But here's the thing. I think that Medroth is going to be a guy that's going to play a lot on this team. And I don't know if that's going to happen right away, but he's got positional eligibility at second base, shortstop, and third base. And last year on Fangraphs, I remember reading a little article about him as part of their prospect series, and they called him a poor man's Dustin Pedroia.
Ooh.
I can live with that.
Yeah.
The White Sox need baseball players. I don't know how fantasy relevant he's going to be, but what we know about him in the minors is that he's got a little bit of, 8-10 home run pop, but he's really good bat to ball. And so the batting average might be something that could end up being helpful to you. And he's also stolen bases at a decent clip there too. And it's a guy that could also be playing fairly regularly on this team. I think he might prove to be a guy that, plays early on as they're trying to sort through what they're going to get. I mean, eventually Colson Montgomery is going to be the starting shortstop on this team. And I think that's going to happen this year. There's a possibility that Medroth could be the starting shortstop opening day. I think he profiles better as a second baseman based on what people have told me. But the only, you know, real competition at shortstop right now is Brooks Baldwin, who profiles probably better as a utility guy. I guess they could use Josh Rojas at shortstop if they really wanted to, but that's probably not a smart call. So Medroth is a guy that I would keep on the radar just because of the fact that I think he does a lot of things well, even though he's not like a superstar type of guy. He's not going to like – and second base is a really deep market this year, as we, you know from – listening to you and Ryan talk about it on the Bubble and the Bloom, like, you know, there's a lot of really good guys there, but he's one that if you are looking for a flyer at the end, I would not mind taking.
Yeah, I like that. And what do you got about Brian Ramos? Cause I've been very happy or optimistic or hopeful about his power upside, but again, it's a playing time thing for me.
Yeah. He's another guy that I don't know where he's going to play exactly. I mean, there had been talk at the end of the season that they were going to move him to the outfield away from third base. I have not heard anything more about that. Now, again, that's another position that the White Sox really don't have any depth at this point. But I think that he's a guy who's got some real power and is another guy similar to Vargas who just really needs an opportunity. You know, it's funny. We talk about these guys, and I feel like you and I have talked about these guys for years. Ramos is 22.
Yeah, it's a young team. Like the White Sox, if these guys, like if even half of them can click, you're going to have some fun in a couple years.
Right. And Steamer doesn't really like him this year. They're not projecting him to even probably be on the team. But I think there's definitely a pathway there that, you know, I mean, they don't have a lot of really good players at those positions that they have, you know, in front of him. And so if he starts off, I think he'll start the season in the minor leagues. But I think if they, you know, find that quickly that Josh Rojas can't hit, which I think we all knew at the end of last year, that, you know, Ramos is definitely a guy that could get a long look at third base this year. And why not? You're going to stink. You might as well just let some of these guys come up and play. Yeah, now, I know. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, it feels like the Rojas thing. It's more just they wanted to bring him in for cheap until they found out what they have is what it feels like. Like he's either going to get DFA'd or maybe they can trade him for, you know, a fifth inning reliever or something. I don't know. Something like a low A prospect or something. And that's what that feels like. Cause I'm with you and I think teams are on the same page. It's just a matter of club control and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And they've talked a lot about, you know, following the Orioles blueprint, right. Of like bringing these guys all up together when they're ready to play and like having them learn how to win together. Okay. Rah, rah, rah. Great. But you still got to have guys that can come up and play now. Somebody's got to play the position, right? So Ramos is going to probably be better than anybody else they're going to put at third base this year, but he probably won't make the team off the bat because they'll want him to go down to Triple A and get some seasoning. I mean, this is a guy that hasn't had, you know, more than 300 at bat, more than 375 at bats in about 4 years. So he really needs to be able to play a little bit and probably prove it a little before he comes back.
Yep. No, that makes a ton of sense to me as well. So we'll see. Guys that are fun to take a chance on. It's like Medroth is ADP 611 right now. Brandon Ramos is 624. These are in-game plays. So they're like, you can definitely use them as depth and see where things go. All right, and we'll hit on Montgomery and some other guys on the prospect section, listeners, so don't worry, we're not ignoring these pieces as well. But we're going to head to the mound here, and one of your newest acquisitions is Martin Perez. And again, people can chuckle if they want, but he's another just veteran arm. He's going to go out there and throw. This is what this team needs. He's going to be the starter on opening day, most likely, barring anything crazy. And honestly, I've drafted him since he landed on a team because he's going to pitch every fifth day, and he's like a 10th starter on a team. His ADP is 704, but got as high as 558 since the signing. What are your thoughts on Martin Perez with the White Sox?
I have no problem with it. We knew that they were going to do something like this and sign a guy like him or a Jose Quintana type, you know, who they had originally back in the day. I've got no problem with it. I think they'll milk what's left of Martin Perez and then try to trade him off for spare parts here at the All-Star break. But you know what you're going to get with him. You know, he's going to give you some innings. They're going to be mostly worry-free innings. He's not going to give you a lot of strikeouts. Gets a lot of ground balls. ERA is going to be in the mid-fours probably. But for them, that is an improvement over what they've had. Now, they have a lot of young guys coming. I see Uncle Ted all over the comments section over here, and he's right. They have a lot of really good young arms that are coming up and are going to make a difference this year, but not immediately and not all at one time. What they did last year was they would give a guy two or three starts and then send him back down and bring up another young guy and kind of phase those guys in to get them a little bit of experience without overexposing them, with the exception of Cannon. Cannon was one of their better starters last year and probably will be one of their better starters again this year.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that one. That leads us into Jonathan Cannon, who did kind of surprise. It was one of those profiles I would look at a lot, and you're kind of looking like, is this sustainable? Is he overachieving? Doesn't strike out a lot of guys, which is always a question for me. But in the minors, struck out better ratios, I should say. ADP 678, though, for a guy that's going to pitch every fifth day, is something we should be interested in.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, obviously you're not going to get a lot of wins out of a White Sox pitcher, but you're going to get innings. And I don't see any reason why this guy doesn't get over 150 this year. He threw 124 for them last year on top of the 37 that he threw in AAA. So if you do a little bit of quick math there, that gets you over that 160 hump that I was just talking about. And at the end of drafts, isn't that what we're looking for? We're looking for the boring 160 inning guys that are going to be able to make 25 starts and not destroy our ratios. Now, the one thing is his ERA last year ended up being 4.49, which is not bad in today's game, considering how bad the team was around him. His xERA was actually 4.37. And he's not a big strikeout guy. He wasn't for the White Sox. He's had better numbers with strikeouts when he was in the minors, but I think he's a guy that can come up and win 7 or 8 games. And I think I know Steamer kind of projects the ERA a little higher than what I would. I think it could actually be a quarter run lower than that. They have it at 4.75. I think it's going to be lower than that. I think he's going to pitch better than that. The guy knows how to pitch. He's got a good feel for it, you know, whether or not those results really follow. But think about where you're drafting him. You're not expecting to get, you know, Jacob DeGrom-type numbers out of Jonathan Cannon. You're expecting him to eat innings and, you know, not destroy your ratios. And I think if you go into it with that mindset, you'll be fine. He, too, is only 24 years old, you know, so.
Could figure it out. You never know. Another young arm. All right, now the rest of the rotation is kind of interesting. You got Davis Martin down here, ADP is 707. How does that is that of interest to you? Because it's just another one of those arms I don't know enough about these guys to love. But again, the ADP, I'm willing to take chances on a lot of guys late in drafts.
Yeah, so the thing everybody's got to know about Davis Martin is that he was coming back off an injury last year. You know, he had the significant Tommy John stuff going on in 23, came back. This is not a super young guy compared to what they have. He's a 28-year-old guy that had been a fifth starter when he first came up very quietly and had a little bit of success. And I think he's developed a little bit of a different pitch mix, and he was using that kick change at the end of the season last year. And if you look at the results that he got, you know, you're going to say, oh, he didn't win any games, Mike. You know, okay, he lost 5 games. But I think
the White Sox didn't either.
So yeah, okay. He came back and was and showed that he can be a productive pitcher, and they have no reason to not throw him out there every fifth day. He's older than the other guys. They're going to throw him out there and see what happens. It was the guy that they had been high on before he had gotten hurt, so he's going to pitch every fifth day. And I do like a little bit of what he did with his pitch mix. You know, I think he's a kind of a really deep sleeper, a name that a lot of people don't know. But I think if you're looking for that 9th or 10th guy to be on your roster, he's definitely a guy that can be there. I think he's got some potential to be a good one.
No, I like that at ADP 707. I'll take chances on that all day long, especially because he's in the rotation. By that point, you're looking for 7th, 8th starters on other teams, hoping they find a spot at some point in time. So I'm with you there. And then you got Sean Burke down here. And this is a name that's been quite popular on social media lately. You've seen that name popping up. And it's weird. We just talked about, you know, these different ADPs. Burke's ADP is 409. So when it comes to starting pitchers for the White Sox, that's pretty high. So how are we feeling on Sean Burke, who, looking at the numbers, can get the strikeouts, also lets a lot of guys on base?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out, because I know my buddies over on the Fantasy Baseball Beat podcast have been deeply discussing Sean Burke in our group text and going back and forth. And there's one person there who likes him and one person who does not. And I'll just leave it at that. But I think he came up and a lot of people saw the K rate and saw the low ERA and saw the fact that he had a couple of wins and 3 starts and maybe kind of started to believe a little bit more in what he is. I'm not sure that I think he's like the second coming and be all and end all. I think he's another guy that's going to pitch and he's going to get an opportunity. He's 25. They're going to see what they have. I think he's somebody that they could look to move pretty quickly if he has any success whatsoever. But he's another one of those guys. I think he's going to throw 120, 130 innings, probably not destroy your ratios, probably not get a lot of wins. And the K rate, you know, last year was about 10.4. You know, Fangraphs has that going down. But if he's a strikeout an inning guy and he puts up those kind of numbers that don't kill your ratios, he could provide you some value. Sorry, guys, on Fantasy Baseball Beat. I'm going to go with him and say, yeah, you can take a shot at him.
Beautiful. We'll have to write that one down and let them know. Torres, guessing he's the one that doesn't like him. But
How did you know?
Just a hunch. So we're going to go with that one. But all right. Now, the 5th starter spot is widely up for grabs, it mm-hmm. feels like. And that's why I kind of left this up to you to discuss whoever you feel you want to, who would be of interest potentially as the 5th starter for the White Sox.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Bryce Wilson is the guy that they signed for nothing, and he's going to be useful in some role, whether that be as the fifth starter, whether that be in the bullpen. My guess is that he probably starts the season in the rotation, and that what they'll end up doing is similar to what they did last year, is to start bringing up some of these young guys a little bit at a time, exposing them for three or four starts, and then sending them back down. I think you're going to see far more of these starting pitcher guys in the second half of the season. And guys that you want to keep an eye on, names that you might want to know here would be Drew Thorpe, who's coming back off an injury, showed that he knew how to pitch quite a bit, but got blown up a few times because his fastball is just not very good. Probably profiles more as like a number three starter, probably once he's mature and ready to go. Nick Nastrini was a guy that they got in the Lance Lynn trade from the Dodgers two summers ago. He looked good in stretches. There were other stretches where he looked really bad, but he's another young guy that they're going to want to come up and give an opportunity to. Both Thorpe and Nastrini are 24. They got another lefty named Jake Eater, who is the guy that they traded Jake Berger for, who had Tommy John surgery and was really slow to come back. And then middle of the summer last year, he kind of started to figure some things out and looked like he could be a guy that could help them out at the major league level. Kai Bush is another lefty that they got in the trade that they made with the Angels, where they also got Edgar Cuero. And he's another guy that's a lefty who's 25 that they have high hopes for. Jairo Iriarte, who came over in the Dylan Cease trade with San Diego, is another guy that's ranked very highly, only 23. There's been some talk about him maybe going to the bullpen, but all of those guys that I just mentioned are all starters right now, and they probably will come that way. Another starting name to know who could be there this year as a very young lefty is Hagen Smith. I know a lot of people will talk about Noah Schultz. Noah Schultz is a 6'9" Chris Sale type of looking pitcher, wicked stuff, incredible slider, but he's not pitched very much. And so Hagen Smith is thought to be ahead of him a little bit. A lot of the prognosticators are saying that Smith will probably get a chance later this summer. Schultz will probably not be up this summer. Uncle Ted keeps talking about Mason Adams, and he's right. Mason Adams is another guy that they're very high on. Another 24-year-old righty who's down at Triple-A. He's probably a top 20 prospect for the White Sox right now. Another guy to kind of keep an eye on. So they definitely have some young arms that are coming up. The offense is obviously something that we're going to be in question, but I think you're going to see combinations of these guys come up, especially as they might move other guys. Like, they're going to move Martin Perez. They're going to move Bryce Wilson if they're valuable at all. And you'll start seeing more of these young guys come up and see what they have. They're also very careful about not wanting to overexpose them or give them too many useless innings, because they're not going to use those guys when they're going to only win 60 games again.
Yeah, so that, to me, and I think Drew Thorpe, when I think this, and it kind of might work for most of these potential fifth starter guys, maybe more so Fab than DC, just because you don't know when they're going to come up. They're going to. You said it earlier in the show that they kept rotating, like every, you get like three starts and you're going back to AAA, and then someone else gets three starts to manage the innings, as you mentioned.
Correct.
So clogging up a spot on a 50-man DC might be tough, but definitely guys to keep in mind when they do get called up, hey, this is what we got. And you might get something out of this. So good to know. Good to know for sure. Now let's head to the pen, because this is a fun one. Fangraphs has Justin Anderson as the closer. That just makes me chuckle. You have Prelander Barella written down here as a guy to talk about. I've always been a fan when he came over from Seattle. My buddy Corbin Young loved him. He actually, on the very first year of doing these previews for the Mariners, said that's the guy he would target in the minor leagues. And then he goes and gets traded like 2 weeks later. Mm-hmm. So I like his stuff. I'm just going to let you have the floor here. What do you think with the bullpen here? Because do you even want to draft a closer for Chicago? They're still going to get saves, but like, and they're all affordable basically. So how would you go about this?
Yeah, somebody's going to get saves. We don't know who it's going to be. It could be a combination of different guys. I know you're right about the Fangraphs page. They have Justin Anderson listed as the closer just because there's really nobody else that's there. I do think Barroa is a guy that they traded for with this idea in mind. You know, he was part of the Gregory Santos trade, and Barroa has had some trouble finding the plate, but he actually looked really good at the end of the season last year. And I think far and away, he's their best option for closing on the White Sox. Now, that doesn't mean that he starts the year with the job. So I want to be really careful when I say that. I mean, I'm not saying that he's going to get 30 saves and he's a closet guy like that. But I think he's definitely a guy that could get 10 to 15 saves once the White Sox figure this thing out. Baroa is their best option. They've got a lefty that's a little bit older there named Fraser Ellard, who also came up last year and was effective for them down the stretch. They got a couple other guys, but a guy that I think that everybody should kind of keep on the radar, just know this name. His name is Shane Smith. He was a Rule 5 pick that the Sox took from Milwaukee. This guy just throws flames. He was a Rule 5 pick for them in December. The Sox had the number one pick in the Rule 5 draft, and they took this guy. They're going to keep him all year. They're going to find a place for him to be. There's been some talk that they would look at him in the rotation. Looking at his profile and his kind of makeup, he seems to me to be a guy that would be a better used in relief. He had he was in 32 games last year for Milwaukee's AAA team. 16 of those were starts. He had a 10.7 K9 rate on a 305 ERA. So he's somebody, again, he's 24. He struggled with, you know, like a lot of all these guys have done, finding the plate. But he will have a role on this team. What it will be, we don't know yet. But I could see him and Baroa being a duo at the back end of that bullpen. Iriarte is another guy that if he could make the team in spring, I could see him pitching out of the bullpen. The guy is electric. He could be really nasty at the end of the games. It all depends on how the Sox want to go about this. I mean, they've got other guys. They traded for Cam Boozer. They got Steven Wilson, who's a veteran down there. Jared Schuster, who stinks, looks like me pitching with feet, just really bad. And you know, they'll probably bring in other guys, non-roster type invitees, to try to fill some of that spot. Ron Marinaccio, the former Yankee, is going to be in camp. Penn Murphy, the former Seattle Mariners, in camp. Jordan Leisure was a guy that had some save opportunities last year for them and looked good in stretches. It would not surprise me at all to see him make this bullpen. But I think you're going to see Baroa be the guy that eventually walks with that job. If you were picking late and you have a deep bench somewhere and could stash him, I think he's definitely worth that level of play there.
Yeah, Baroa's ADP is 530 over the last 15 drafts. That's not bad if you can sneak even 10, 15 saves out of that. And then you mentioned the Shane Smith idea, which, yeah, if he's the number one overall pick in the Rule 5, where they have to keep him essentially, ADP 745. It's like the last pick. So that's interesting. That's very, very interesting. And that's one thing I remember when I used to do a lot of stuff with Curlin, that he really would focus on was that Rule 5 stuff for DCs, especially because they have to keep them on the roster or they lose them. So if they're going to invest the time to draft them, they're going to keep them up type thing. So there's got to be something there. Doesn't always pan out, but that's where you can kind of find a diamond here or there. So makes sense. All right, let's talk prospects. You mentioned it's six in the top 60. You got a good crop of guys. As a catcher fan over here, you got plenty of them. That's always a push. And like, hey, for the listeners out there, I didn't even ask about Corey Lee because I know there's other things coming through the system here. So we'll start with your two catchers, Edgar Cuero and Kyle Teal. Where are you thinking this is going to play out? Because one seems readier than the other is what I'm going to say.
Yeah, I think it's hard to say. I mean, you know, we're not there, so we don't know. Teal is the better catcher defensively. That's pretty widely accepted. Cuero did make some really big strides catching last year, but he seems to profile more as a bat-first type of catcher as opposed to defense. Teal is seen to be more of the real deal. Teal is a guy that's probably going to hit like 270, 15, 18 home runs. I'm hoping, you know, I mean, you can throw out a limb here. I got to take a risk on something, but, you know, maybe a poor man's like Adley Rutschman. We got poor man's Pedroia, poor man's Adley Rutschman, kind of a similar type of guy. I think he'll be there by the midsummer. Now, one thing that's interesting to know is that the White Sox bench coach, his name is McKelvin. He was the bench coach, or not a bench coach, but was a quality coach in Milwaukee. And he is seen as a catching guru. So if he can kind of work with those guys, Corey Lee, I think, will be a great backup. He'll be a great second guy to have. He was overexposed last year, you know, especially by curveballs. But it's a guy that will hold that seat until Teal's ready. And then I could see him and Teal splitting, you know, a 70-30 split and doing it that way. I'm wondering if Cuero might end up playing first base or doing more of the DH thing. I don't think Andrew Vaughn is long for the White Sox, you know, and I think that that's a fairly easy spot to replace. But Cuero definitely can hit. He matured with the power last year, which was something that they were waiting to see. And definitely think that those guys will both be playing on the team and having meaningful at-bats this season.
Yep, that's interesting to me because when they went and traded for Teal, we're all sitting there going, wait a minute, like, what are we doing here? I've liked Corey Lee and DCs in years past. I don't have any this year, but last year I had him as my third or fourth catchers in those formats. He had his moments, but I agree. Edgar Cuero and Teal seem very, very interesting. So both rather affordable if you're looking that direction. Now, you mentioned Hagen Smith and Noah Schultz. What else do you have on them? Because everyone thinks Noah Schultz is going to be the next big thing, it feels like. And I say that tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah, he is a big thing, that's for sure. He's 6'9". He's a local kid. You know, he's from Oswego, which is like two towns over from where I live. He's 6'9". He's lefty. He's got the funky W motion like Chris Sale does. I think a lot of people, you know, obviously the size comparisons are, you know, draw the Randy Johnson comparisons. But he isn't pitched very much. And I think the issue that I think that the White Sox are going to have with that, and why I say Hagen Smith is going to be more ready quicker, is that Schultz was a high school kid that they drafted out of high school. He's got no college experience. He's only thrown a few innings here and there. They really babied him. He didn't throw any more than three innings at a time. But this guy has got a really good fastball, and his slider is already legendary. So he's gonna be a guy that they're gonna rely on, that when he gets there is gonna be an ace. And between him and Hagen Smith, there's a lot of folks in the industry that think that the White Sox might have the two best left-handed prospects in all of baseball with those two guys. A lot of people wondered why they took Hagen Smith. It was because they knew they were going to get rid of Crochet. They knew that they needed to start replacing those ace type pitchers. And Smith and Schultz are definitely those types of guys that are there. Now, Smith is a little bit more ready than Schultz, just because of the fact that he was at Arkansas. And there's more thought that he would be there sooner. Schultz is only 21. You know, he's been in the minors for 3 years. And Hagen Smith is about the same age, but he's got a little bit more experience. I think Smith will make it first. That's just a gut.
Yeah, Smith has not been drafted over the last 15 drafts, which is impressive. Schultz has an ADP of 513. So, you can get Smith for free if you're looking to go that direction on that one. And then Colson Montgomery, two-time FPAS attendee, Colson Montgomery, not FPAS, but you know what I mean. He's been there 2 years in a row, and he's looked good there. He hasn't been able to put it together consistently at AAA. So how are we feeling heading into 2025 for Montgomery, who right now has an ADP of 530?
Wow. Yeah, I like him. I think he's going to be fine. This is another young guy that seems like he's been around forever, but he was drafted out of high school, multi-sport athlete. I think he's going to be just fine. I think he's going to get an extended run this year, and he's going to get an extended opportunity. It would not surprise me at all, you know, if somewhere in late May, early June, they call him and just say, yeah, you're playing shortstop. Now, the White Sox really need him to play shortstop. I know that there's been a lot of talk about him moving to third base. Privately, from what I've been told inside the organization, they all firmly believe that he can play shortstop. The scouts that you and I talked to when we were down in Arizona, they all say the same thing. They're like, yeah, on a really good team, he might play third base, but for the Sox, he can play shortstop. And I think that he will. This is a guy that's not going to have a huge stolen base upside, but it's a guy that's going to hit for some pop. The comp that you hear a lot with him is, Corey Seager. He's got a similar type of body, similar type of swing. I don't know if he's going to hit 30 home runs like Corey Seager does every year, but Montgomery is a player, and I think he's going to be a guy that's going to be the centerpiece of this thing eventually, along with Braden Montgomery and some other guys that they got coming up. The White Sox really got to figure out offense. And, you know, they last year, what I really liked that they did last year, and it was really unnoticed, was hiring Brian Bannister and Josh Barfield to kind of revamp what they do in their minor league system, revamp how they teach guys how to play baseball to win. Because what they did before that was the mistake was they had athletes. They got Moncada. They had Eloy. They had Robert, all these guys that were just thoroughbred athletes, but none of them know how to play baseball. And the, and as a high school baseball coach, which you know that I do on the side as well, right? Like what we're looking for is guys that know how to win, guys that know how to do the little things. The White Sox don't have any of those guys. And so adding guys like Montgomery and Meadroth and Teal and getting some of these guys that have an offensive pedigree that know how to do these things and can kind of grow up together through the system led by people who know how to do that, I think it's going to be really great. Hiring Fuller from Baltimore was a great get for them too. They've really revamped what they're trying to do. They've got young guys in the positions that they need to have young guys in to grow with those guys and be patient. I'm expecting at least a little bit more excitement from the doormat that they were last year with some of these young guys kind of coming and going. I think that there definitely are some guys here prospect-wise that can definitely help you in the right scenarios, in the right leagues, depending on, you know, how you're building and what you're thinking. But Colson Montgomery is going to be a starting shortstop in the major leagues, guys.
I love it. And listening to you talk there, it's always funny to me for teams like this and other teams where people go, man, I don't know what we're going to talk about. It's such a bad team. You seem pretty optimistic as things went on there. I know it's a few years away. It's a young team, and they got to – what the hardest part for them is they're going to have to bring in a couple veterans via free agency to help these young kids out. That's where you have to somehow convince these guys, hey, come here and help us type thing. Like, I know Martin Perez isn't a flashy name, but that's what he's there for. He's there to basically help mentor these pitchers. You need a couple more, like as bad as it sounds, like a Bregman would be awesome. Like somebody like that, just come on in and just show these guys how to be pros, how to win. Like you said, that goes, like, the coach is going to do so much. You got to have that guy out there sweating with you to show you how to do it. And it's close.
You got to build.
I just lost your audio. See, he got so excited about the White Sox guys. He got so excited about them. Yeah. Just 1 second. He'll be back in a minute. We're wrapping things up there. Nah, I lost it. I think it unplugged or something. But, we're going to wrap it up there and see where things go. But White Sox, there he is. He's back.
Woo!
All right. So we're close. Things are looking good. Last question I have for you, which I have for every guest. You kind of said it early on. But what are your expectations this year? You said closer to 60 wins, but what are we thinking this year with this team? Because, again, most of these guys are anywhere from like 22 to 25, so it's going to take another couple of years to – and they're not going to get called up either, so it's going to take a few more runs.
Yeah, the way that I look at it, you know, you said the word optimistic, and I'm by rule, I'm a fairly optimistic guy when it comes to these types of things. Last year was historically bad. It got worse because of bad management and trades and different things that went on. But if you look at it, if they can figure out a way, they were competitive in a lot of games last year. They were competitive in more games than they were not. If they can figure out a way to kind of patch up the back end of that bullpen, there's no reason why they couldn't win another 20 to 25 games. They'll still be terrible, but at least you have that kind of hope of, hey, we went from 41 to 61 or to 65. I think that that's doable. I really do. I mean, I know a lot of people are betting that they're going to be historically bad again. I don't think that can happen. I don't see they've got better players. The guys that they've been bringing in are decent and they're professional. And I think that, it's going to be good to be away from Moncada and Eloy and these other guys that were just clubhouse poison, right? Like they just couldn't figure it out, you know, good players, but not a team, not a good thing like that way. I think it could be a 60 to 65 win team, equally bad, lose 100 games, but start seeing progress towards these other things that you're talking about. And I'm really hopeful for that. I mean, I think that bringing in those guys to build up the infrastructure, and then I think he gets a lot of shit around town for, getting fleeced on certain trades or whatever. But I think what he's doing is trying to find guys like Talkman, who you brought up earlier, guys that know how to get on base, guys that, you know, are professional players, not guys that are going to be super flashy, but guys that you can win with and other guys can learn from how to win with, you know? And I think that those are good moves. And I think that that'll pay that dividends for them this year.
Yep. I'm with you. It's going to be fun. Optimism is important. You got to have some fun with this game of baseball and see where this goes. But before we head out of here, my friend, remind everybody where they can find you and what you got going on.
Oh, where can't you find me? That's a better question. No, I'm on the Twitter machine, X, whatever you call it. I'm trying Blue Sky. I'm having a little bit of a hard time figuring out since I'm not super techie. You can find me on Twitter at MDRC0508. You can find my work over at Fantrax and Rotoballer. You can find the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. The Fantasy Baseball Beat with Chris Torres and Dave Funnel. We're now on Pitcher List, which has been great for us. The guys over there are just terrific. They're so good to us. Such great human beings all around. We're just so happy to be able to do that. And so we got enough to keep us busy, my friend. Baseball practice, we've started at the high school. We're hitting on Wednesdays and playing defense on Sundays. So we're building up to that. So excited to get baseball season going. And again, as always, I thank you for the opportunity to be on with you. I always enjoy talking with you. We always find something to talk about for an hour, don't we?
Yes, we do. That's the beauty of it. Like I said, at the very beginning, in the end, you and I just like baseball, so we could probably figure out some way to kill an hour pretty easily when it comes to these things. Like we do it over a few beers every November, so pretty easy stuff in that regard. But again, folks, make sure you're following the good doctor, Mr. Mike Carter, if you're not already. Always good stuff there, and check out the Fantasy Baseball Beat podcast. Lots of fun stuff they got going over there. Torres and Funnel are good people. I need to get Funnel on the show. I have not had him yet. And that would be a fun one as well. But until next time, everybody, this was Benched with Bubba, episode 716, your 2025 Chicago White Sox team preview. Catch y'all later.